And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. At the age of 7 months, Lee Tisdale, who would later be known as Motley, was diagnosed with a form of hemophilia that caused his blood to clot and his body to bruise very easily. But after a childhood full of corrective surgeries and intensive care, he came to Kansas City where he became an artist and a rebel, respected and loved by many. Lee Tisdale, a.k.a. Motley Story, is told in the new film called My Friend Motley, and our guest is the writer and director of that film, Chris Snipes. The film will screen this Friday, June 2nd, at the Screenland Theater in the Crossroads at 6:30 p.m. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Who is Motley, as opposed to Lee Tisdale? Who's Motley?
Motley is kind of the name that he acquired, that he took on himself around high school. He was always kind of a rebel. I mean, growing up with the kind of disabilities that he had, he was always kind of on the outskirts. And especially back then, it wasn't – he was just classified with everybody else that had wildly varying things wrong with them. So they kind of all got shoved in the special trailer and kind of, became outcasts, kind of played by themselves, sat at their own lunch table, stuff like that. So he's always kind of a rebel.
And someone told him he was sort of a Motley fellow.
Yes, exactly.
So that's how he got it.
Yes, yeah, that would be the short version of that story. Yes. So he kind of liked that. He was kind of into Mott the Hoople. So he kind of combined Mott with his name, Lee. So it seemed to fit perfectly.
When did you become friends with Motley?
I became friends with Motley in the late 80s, around 86.
What struck you about him?
Oh, geez. Well, first of all, his appearance. You know, he was a very interesting-looking character. He had his whole physical appearance, his presence. He was he looked, just if you saw him expressionless on the street, he looked like a scary guy. But actually, if you went up and started talking to him, he was one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. So I was drawn kind of by his enigmatic appearance.
Everybody was drawn by his enigmatic appearance.
Definitely.
And his sort of weird mannerisms and his rebel sensibilities.
Exactly.
So what made you undertake this film project?
Well, I approached him with it probably about 2 years before he died. And he was very excited about it on one hand because he felt that what he was doing was important, but he also felt like he wouldn't be recognized for it. He felt like nobody really was paying attention and he probably would just go unnoticed. So I thought that he had a story worth telling. So I approached him with it and said, hey, what would you feel about me making a movie about your life? And he said, yeah, that sounds good. But once the reality came of me actually coming into his space and interviewing him and getting a little more intimate, I think, than he was willing to be at that time, because he was kind of depressed around that part of his life, it just became harder and harder to do. And I finally, it became so difficult to reach him, he just became very reclusive that I just kind of put it on the back burner. And then he passed away. And somebody called me with that horrible message. And I decided I've got to do this. And so I started filming at his memorial service and just kind of been doing it for the last 5 years.
And now you describe it as a labor of love. Elaborate on that.
Well, I mean, I can't guarantee that this will have, I mean, I'm very biased. So I know Motley. He's been a very good friend of mine for a long time. So I'm interested in his story. So I don't know how much other people who don't know him will be interested in his story, but from just the little bit that I've experienced about getting it out on the internet and stuff like that, I've got a lot of good response. So I don't expect this to be shown on PBS anytime soon. So as far as I know, it may never get out of Kansas City. I'm planning to enter it in film festivals, but I have no idea how it'll be received. It'll be interesting to find out.
You interviewed more than 40 family members and friends for this film. Mm-hmm. After interviewing him and starting out with him and then not quite working out, you putting on the back burner. Uh-huh. What did you find out in the course of making this film that you didn't already know about Motley from all of these interviews?
Sure. The only part of Motley's life that I knew was the part that when he came to Kansas City to go to the Art Institute, that's kind of where we crossed paths. So I was able to find out a lot about his childhood, kind of what got him from how he started out to where I found him, where I crossed paths with him. And it was just interesting to find out all these little details that I had no idea about. Like, I don't know how to go into any detail about it because it would just take a long time to do. But it was just interesting to be able to piece all these pieces of his life together because he had so many different personas. He was just so many different people from so many different walks of life really found it easy to relate to him. So it was interesting to gather all those different stories together in one place and kind of just have a picture sort of Motley.
He did go to the Casey Arts Institute where he was a sculpture major.
Mm-hmm.
What sense do you get of why he chose that medium?
Well, I think he first started getting into art because he was basically physically, you know, it was hard for him to get around. So he spent a lot of time. At one time, he spent a year in a hospital room. So he really learned how to, that's where he kind of got his artistic chops. He kind of really learned how to express himself that way. And I think the easiest medium to be, instead of like a 8-foot canvas, he chose little tiny little boxes. And he came across a book of an artist named Joseph Cornell. There's a piece up at the art museum here. And they're little tiny boxes with sort of little dioramas in them, with little things, found objects and stuff like that. And I think that something about that really resonated. Like taking these elements that just people had discarded. Like he would, you know, he'd dumpster diving all the time and people would bring him stuff. And he at one point was going to make a whole piece made out of the red brake light plastic out of cars. You know, he just loved taking forgotten things and making something cool out of them.
How was his art received?
It was received very well, actually. Yeah, I mean, people just loved his stuff. And he always was sort of, he was insecure about that when he first started showing his stuff because he thought that people just felt sorry for him, like they were buying his pieces just to help him out because, you know, they felt pity for him. But really, his work stands on its own. If you never met him, his work would still be outstanding.
Well, let's hear a snippet from the film on where his art is being described.
So I would watch him work. Sometimes he'd sit at a coffee table and, you know, we'd drink some wine or whatever, and he would be making these tiny little matchbox with little characters in it. And everything was to evoke a sort of mood, and the mood was fairly consistent. It was fairly dark, melancholy, and tortured usually. I could relate to it completely.
You know, you see somebody runs like a triathlon, you think, God, what an endurance test. And, you know, looking at someone like Motley, it's just like, they got nothing on him. I mean, that's an endurance test. That is just amazing.
He never complained about pain or anything like that. You didn't know. I never knew he was going through so much pain and all that. He didn't talk about it.
That was a snippet from the film My Friend Motley about local artist Lee Tisdale, who took on the name Motley. We're here with the filmmaker Chris Snipes. That was a clip. Who's talking in this clip, and what does his art look like?
That is Archer Pruitt talking in this clip, who's gone on to be a famous artist and so on and so forth. What does his art look like? His main
meaning,
art...
what is the feeling that evokes?
Well, it's because they are these found objects. He takes these little boxes, like old cigar boxes, old wooden boxes, that he sort of kind of reassembles and gives them new life. And he places things in there that almost look like things that you would just stumble upon in an attic. And they're kind of like little treasures. But in the context in which they're in, there's a sort of a darker quality to them. There's something going on under the surface you can just sense by looking at them, because it may be a row of Santa Claus heads that are just, you know, chipped and broken from years of wear lined up on a board, but wrapping barbed wire around them, it completely puts it in a different light altogether.
It sure does. And we have some of these photos of his art, Motley's art, on our website at kcur.org. Now, Motley had sort of a star quality, a fringe rock star quality, as people described it in the film. Talk about that.
He, you know, people like the fascination that I described with him, just his appearance and wanting to get to know this guy a little bit better. That was across the board. I mean, there was just something about his appearance. I mean, not only because he, you know, had pink hair and wore dresses and stuff like that, but you could tell by the way that he carried himself that he was kind of an old soul. He'd been around for a while. He knew something about life that a lot of us didn't. And perhaps that was suffering. Perhaps that was just knowing what it's like to be in constant pain and being around people that take that for granted. But he was not the kind of person that would ever hold that against anybody. Nor did he ever complain. He was a very humble person. And I think that kind of person just draws people toward them.
And the pain is reflected in his work.
Definitely.
As well as sometimes the way he abuses himself. He even became a punk rock musician with the group Mudhead as well.
Yes.
Given his condition, he hurt himself a lot during his performances. Talk about that.
Most definitely. I think he liked having these little windows, these little safe contexts where he could express himself and kind of forget who he was and his limitations. So sometimes on stage with Mudhead, he would just exert himself in a way that he probably shouldn't have. But in the heat of the moment, you know, it was something that some kind of catharsis that he just needed to get out, understandably, because he was carrying around a lot of stuff, you know. So it was good for him to have that expression. But because he would get caught up in the moment, he would end up sometimes paying for it later.
A lot of people who watched Mudhead said the performances were sometimes disturbing, but the group was well received.
Oh, very well received, definitely. It was when they were around in Kansas City, there was nothing else going on like Mudhead at all. There was mostly like hardcore punk and like, you know, hippie jam bands, but nothing like Mudhead.
Well, we're going to hear right now in this moment the reaction to the band Mudhead that Motley was in from your film called My Friend Motley. Let's check it out.
Mudhead were genuinely unsettling just because of the way they were. Like, Motley was a weird-looking dude, and he was quite happy making other people deal with his eccentricity. It wasn't really a handicap so much as it was kind of almost a persona. Like, this nearly broken dude is going to be in your face all night.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. That excerpt you just heard was from a film called My Friend Motley, about local artist Lee Tisdale, who took on the name Motley and became a sculptor and punk rock musician. He was a man with several physical afflictions who inspired our artistic community here in the Kansas City metro area. The film screens this Friday, June 2nd, at the Downtown Screenland Theater in the Crossroads. Our guest is filmmaker Chris Snipes. Now, things get even more complicated with Motley. He's already got the hemophilia. He's drinking alcohol. He's bouncing around on stage as a punk rock musician, very reclusive, very in and out, mood swings. But they get even more complicated when he contracts HIV, and you add HIV to the equation. Mm-hmm. Tell us that phase of his life, how that came to be.
How it came to be? Well, because he was a hemophiliac, his blood couldn't clot, so he had to inject a factor. He should have injected it every day, but he didn't. He only injected it when he needed it, which was often a little later than he needed it. But it just sort of, I mean, he had a close relationship with death, I think, throughout his life, because the nature of his illness could just go in a downward spiral at any moment, really. So that just added another layer of his sort of his relationship to his mortality, in a sense. He didn't really talk about it a lot, but it came out. I think it came out in his art and it came out in his music too. And somehow, I mean, usually when somebody is diagnosed with something like that, they really, you know, sort of start deteriorating almost just in anticipation of something like that. But nothing like that happened to him at all. It almost seemed to, after an initial period of just coping with it, it almost seemed to bolster him after a while. He became really active in ACT UP. He gained more weight than he ever had in his life, which doesn't usually happen. But it was just another layer, I think, in the deck of cards that he was dealt when he was born that was just really hard for a lot of us to deal with.
And it was sort of a cruel twist of fate, because this was HIV in the days before blood transfusions were screened, and he required blood transfusions because of his hemophilia.
Mm-hmm. But ironically, he didn't get HIV through.
Right.
Yeah, he got it through the stuff that was supposed to help him, you know, be able to not bleed.
Wow.
Well,
that's the iron of it.
Yeah, exactly. And the really screwed up aspect of it is that these corporations that were distributing this blood knew about that. They knew that it was tainted. They just, you know, they're weighing their risks and their liability. They just said, oh, well, just see how it plays out. And then once finally, you know, it was discovered, they withdrew the blood supply and then sold it to Europe and Japan.
Talk about the lawsuit.
The settlement was something after this was brought to light that, you know, this is obviously an injustice. And so light was brought to that. It was played out in court. the lawyers divided up $4 million, but the people who actually were still alive with hemophilia that didn't die of HIV got $100,000 apiece, which is kind of like measly. That's your life. That's
right.
What your life is worth.
Right, and an afterthought when you assign a monetary number to someone's life.
Exactly, and the stipulation, there was even a stipulation on the first settlement that he got two, and it was that he had to spend it all on medical-related stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, on top of it, you know? Just,
how did that change him?
It just seemed to give him more resolve, you know? I think it made a lot of people around him obviously cared about him. It made them very bitter and very angry. But it didn't manifest in him that way.
Former KCUR host and Pitch Calendar editor Gina Kaufman said in an obituary of Motley that he didn't know he was hurt, didn't act like he was sick most of the time. Did you find that to be the case as well? You mentioned.
Sure. I think
his resolve.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was like that until just the last couple of years of his life when his physical deterioration just got to the point where it really interfered with just basic everyday things like taking a shower and much less luxurious things like making art. But up until then, he wouldn't know at all.
His funeral, which you see at the beginning of the film, is more like a celebration, singing, laughing, Mardi Gras style atmospheres, second line bands. How did that come about? And tell us what it was like to be there. Describe the funeral.
excuse me. The memorial service was at the Rime Center. It's a Tibetan Buddhist center in Kansas City. And it was, you know, it was somber. I mean, it was just a few days after he died, which actually yesterday was the 5-year anniversary of his death. And, you know, there was a lot of testimony, a lot of teary-eyed testimony about, you know, what Mott meant to everybody and stuff like that. But still, there was a lot of little breaks of, you know, there was a lot. Motley was hilarious. He was a funny guy. And there was a lot of funny stories going around about Motley. So a lot of those got told and it kind of broke up the heavy feeling, the heavy atmosphere of that. But then that went to a memorial parade, sort of a New Orleans style procession, sort of started at YJ's and ended up at the Late Show. And that was amazing. It was like one of the best things I had ever been a part in my life. It was started at YJ's. People gathered from the memorial and they marched through the streets to the Late Show, which is probably a good 10 or 15 blocks away. Not announced. The police force did not know about this. There was just a couple of guys in bikes and a little mini bike going up ahead, stopping traffic. And people were lighting off smoke bombs. I mean, I'm not sure why they did that. But it was just a very spontaneous movement right through downtown Kansas City. And surprisingly, nobody made any effort to stop it or anything. We never saw a policeman or anything like that. But it was it didn't hit me until then how special Motley was to people more than me. I mean, it was just amazing how many different ages and, you know, walks of life. And there were just so many different people there. And it was such a wonderful thing to be a part of. Hopefully that some of that comes out in the movie, but it was nothing like being there.
A lot of these types of parades start at YJ's and stuff like that.
Yes.
Talk about the culture of that crossroads area, that area of downtown Kansas City in Motley's heyday. He actually lived in the space where Grinders is now.
Yes.
Talk about the artistic culture of that era.
Well, that was about the time that I moved to Lawrence. So I wasn't in the heat of it, but I visited it because I visited Motley all the time and I knew people down on the crossroads. But around the time that he started his gallery, it was about the first time that it was the beginning of when people started to put galleries in that part of the crossroads. It was before it really hit big, and then people from all over started going down to shop for art there. So it was really a kind of a time where you wasn't sure what direction the crossroads was going to go in. So it was just basically this group of artists that kind of lived sort of near each other in downtown Kansas City, and they became sort of a tight-knit community that still is around today. A lot of those galleries still exist. Some have moved on and closed and gone and done other things. But it really, I think, helped to solidify the art community down there, which I think – I mean, and also downtown Kansas City, which was flailing around for decades, you know. I think finally it's starting to come to life again, and the crossroads is responsible for part of that.
And how has that community changed in the 5 years since Motley's passing?
Well, I think the crossroads community. Yeah, I think it's gotten a lot more accessible to people. Usually, I mean, artistic communities can be very insular. They're just, you know, a bunch of artists hang around them, each other, and they have group shows with each other, and it doesn't really get past that. They buy each other's art if they can afford to. But I think with the Crossroads, it made it art in Kansas City more accessible to people who aren't artists, people who just like to come in and just see what's going on. So I think it brought it to light.
So when you sat down and you started the process of this film about your friend's life, what was the process like? How did you want to frame your story?
See, with something like a documentary, I wasn't, you know, you don't know what's going to come out in interviews. So I had no idea what material I had to work with until I did the interviews. And the interviews took, they were still going on like 6 months ago is probably when I did my last interview. But it wasn't until I got a good group of those together until I realized what direction the movie was going to go in, reoccurring themes that came up with people, stuff that I didn't know about that I thought was important to know about Motley. So it just kind of formed, it kind of gelled itself, and I just had to carve it into an intangible shape that it would make sense to other people.
The soundtrack is very heavy and ominous. Even between the stories and anecdotes that elicit joy, and where people were remembering crazy stuff that Motley did or remembering happy times. Why did you choose to overlayer the story with this sort of ominous, dramatic music?
Sure. I'm a little biased about the music because it's my friend Brett Smith, who I've known since eighth grade. Plus, I think it's good stuff. I didn't want to do an injustice to the story by trying to fluff it up, like trying to keep like everybody lighthearted.
Left ragtime out of it.
Yeah, although if it was, you know, if it had something to do with the story, I would definitely throw some in there. But you know, it's a heavy story. It's hard to tell it in a way that is just makes it politely acceptable to everybody. So I wanted that heaviness present, and I felt that the music isn't so somber to me. It is heavy. It is atmospheric, but it's not depressing to me. I just find it sort of melancholy and bittersweet, which is the feeling that I wanted for the movie.
Let's hear some more clips from this movie and see where that takes us in this conversation.
Okay.
So from the very beginning, he started, walking and bumping into things and having to go to the hospital for transfusions. And because if he would start bleeding internally, there was no way to stop it other than a transfusion. And in those days, if you got a transfusion, they didn't have blood banks, and our insurance would expect us to pay back every pint of blood he used, plus one. So we would go knocking on people's doors, you know. They would see us coming. You'd see them parting the curtain saying, oh, no, here they are again, you know.
That's from a new film, My Friend Motley, about local artist Lee Tisdale, who took on the name Motley before he came to Kansas City, but he comes to Kansas City and becomes a sort of artistic icon here in the city, inspired many in our artistic community. Our guest is Chris Snipes, the filmmaker behind this piece, My Friend Motley. That clip describes his childhood and all of the treatment options that he had to go through to kind of set the tone for his life. What's it like to be a good friend while you're concerned about your friend's health, but also letting him make his own decision?
Well, you hardly ever got the option to help. He was a very, very self-sufficient guy, it was to his detriment sometimes because, you know, he was so hesitant to even ask a friend for a ride to the hospital because he didn't get around in a car. He couldn't drive, anything like that, that sometimes his health suffered for it. And it was hard to watch that. You know, it's like when I would get a call from him and he had just gotten out of the hospital for 2 weeks and I knew nothing about it. It really was difficult. You know, it's like, you can't think that I wouldn't have given you a ride to the hospital. Come on. You know, of course I would have. Don't think that you would be imposing on me. But that's just the kind of guy he was. He wanted to be independent. He didn't want to impose on anybody, and he suffered for that.
You're offering a private screening for friends and family. What made you decide to restrict it to that?
To do that? Well, there's only 150 seats in the theater. And
well, yeah.
for starters. And we, as we started to sort of assemble a list of people that we thought might want to attend that we knew of, that slowly started to grow towards 150. So it's like, well, we want to let other people besides his circles into that. So we decided just to draw a line and have, you know, the private screening be first and then have the public screening be afterwards. And if we sell enough tickets actually online before that happens, they're actually going to do a Sunday show too. So yeah, there's just too many people.
You chose Kickstarter to raise more money for this project. How's that going? How did that go?
Oh, it went fantastic. I was asking for $7,500 and made close to $10,000. It was amazing how much support his friends and family and just complete strangers gave. I couldn't have gone better, actually.
What do you think resonates with people beyond his friends and family about his story?
I think just the fact that perspective, I think, is what it can be boiled down to, at least as far as I'm concerned, is that somebody who's gone, I think people like to hear about people who have tough circumstances and are able to turn it into something positive regardless of those circumstances. I think everybody can resonate with that, even if they haven't gone through it themselves.
What does Motley mean to the creative community here as you celebrate his life with this film?
Well, I think not only is his personality important and probably what most people remember about Motley when you talk about him, but also his, like you said, his contribution to the artistic community. Even before he opened his own gallery, he was an active part of the art community and had shows that were just received very, very well. But then he had his own gallery and started showing other artists. And I think that the MoMo Gallery, which is his gallery, became such a It just had a different feel than most other galleries. It was very, very laid back. I mean, he lived there too, so it was kind of like being in his living room. So it was very relaxed, and there was Motley's personality, which was very open and inviting, and I think people were just drawn to that.
You're currently also in post-production on this film. Do you plan to make more changes?
No, I think it's... Yeah, I'm going to say it's done.
Well, it's
you
done.
Heard it here.
What do you think Motley would say about this film?
It's hard to say. He was such a humble, reserved person that I think, I mean, he would very much appreciate the effort and love and time that went into it. But I think he would also be sort of embarrassed.
Do you think his spirit will be present at the screening?
I don't know. I hope so. I think so.
The film is called My Friend Motley. It's Lee Tisdale's story, Motley's story, told through that film, My Friend Motley is the name of the film, and our guest is Chris Snipes. The film, currently still in post-production, but done, as we just heard, will screen Friday, June 2nd at the Screenland Theater, aptly in the Crossroads.
Saturday. Yes.
Chris Snipes, thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And tune in tomorrow as the food critics set the table with a chat about their favorite culinary delights and where to go with your party of 10 for that special occasion. Our show is executive produced by Bill Anderson, produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Charlie Upchurch. Kim Noble is our announcer. Emily Mutert manages our website at kcur.org. Intro music is by Miles Bonney. The outro music you're hearing right now is by the Will Knotts. Up to Date is next with NPR sports commentator Frank DeFord, plus the weekend to-do list. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.